Ah, okay. So this is a... Oh, I should stand here now. Actually, can I have the microphone?
So this is a talk that I originally made for Susie. I've been in a bit of a rush this week, so I'm afraid I haven't managed to customize it as much for this audience as possible. I'm going to hurry through the ridiculous quantities of slides I have here as very fast, so please slow me down if you want to talk about anything. But first I will say I'm talking about salt. The guy who made salt, Thomas Hatch, used to work for the American military on submarines. Salt has salty metaphors all the way through it and was built with the idea of how do you run a submarine infrastructure initially. So, I'm not going to ask why is automation important. I know who the audience is. You all know about configuration management, so that's going to skip here. Quite a few people know me. I'm a software maker. Susie dragged me into working on configuration management of Ceph with Salt initially. Since then, I've been contracting in a small bank on Salt. And this is a talk of a bit about my experiences of extending Salt. Doesn't go quite into as much depth as I would have liked for this audience about how do you actually use Salt. But I will say that pretty much all configuration management systems are the same. Mostly all you're doing is installing packages, installing configuration files, and they all have a DSL, they all have metadata about nodes, and you can query things. So I think here we've got adding roles to nodes. This is how you do it in Salt. The syntax is all in Jinja, sorry, in YAML. Everything is in YAML, wherever you look in Salt. So we have a top SLS file on the Salt master that describes what role each node has. This is from my home system at home. You can place files on nodes, so you can put a Ceph configuration file. You can also use templating here with Jinja in the content, which can grab values from pillars and grains, which are different types, and mines, which are different types of information source, which you can then use in the templating of Ceph. Unlike Puppet's DSL, which has lots of ifs and conditionals, this is all done in Jinja, which is a Jinja 2, to be precise, which is a very standard web templating engine. There's an example of adding packages. There's an example of starting a service. I'm going to carry on jumping through this. And then you get onto the area of extending Salt. And I shall get onto that later. First, we'll do a little comparison with other configuration management systems. You all know Puppet. It's the biggest one. We all know Ceph. It's the next biggest one and the biggest one in Germany for some reason. I don't know why Germany is different, but I looked this up when I was doing this talk originally. I don't know if it's still true. Both of these two systems are based on Ruby. Then we have Ansible, which is the next youngest of the big four configuration management systems of this time. This is also a push-based system. Unlike Ceph and Puppet, which pull the configuration and cache it locally on the node that you're managing, in Salt terms, a minion. Ansible and Salt typically push the instructions to the job. Now, I'll mention that a bit further later. The other big difference between Puppet and Ceph, where they're Ruby-based, Salt and Ansible are Python-based. This will affect what skills you guys who use these configuration management systems need to do when you're extending things. Salt has a pretty steep learning curve. I don't think it's as steep as Ceph, but I haven't worked with Ceph enough to say for certain. It's definitely steeper than when I first started using Puppet. The documentation kind of assumes you already know it, which is kind of annoying. It's got an event-based model. Events are fired off, such as configure this machine. That's to enter state, high state, to speak salt terminology. Events will be lost if events are not processed. And this is a hitch. If you want to configure your system, there are lots and lots of things you can do with salt. I think it's best to start thinking of it, I'm not going to bother reading out these slides, think of it as a framework for doing your distributed computing of your data center. Yes? So, hey, not distributed computing in terms of the job stuff, but distributed computing of, hey, this thing happened, or this node came up, or, hey, I want to react to this event that happens. Say, someone's finished a build job, so I write a file in the build job, so I'm then going to trigger my repositories to be built, to be upgraded, because I've got new packages to put into my repositories. These sort of coordinations are very trivial to do in Salt. This is one of its great strong points. Taking back to the submarine idea, I think it's kind of like switch on battle stations, go to DEFCON 3 or whatever it means. This is the sort of thing that Salt excels at. So personally, everyone who's known me from the day I entered HEP knows my inexperience when I came here, and I learned a lot from you guys. But one of the arguments that I was on the right side of when I started was the push versus pull argument. And I'm still very much a person who thinks that having a pull-based system is very useful for these reasons. Having a push-based system, and I since learned today that Ansible isn't completely push under all circumstances, but having a push-based system does mean the master needs to be running. Otherwise, events get lost. This is, for me, the biggest failing of Salt. Yeah. I'm just about to start with this current contract that I'm working on a high availability multi-master Salt system. This is, I believe, completely possible. We've had it working in prototype, but I've since reorganized the entire Salt configuring Salt system, so it needs to be retested before it goes into production. So we haven't done this yet. We also have the idea in Salt that we can have Salt masters as a sort of proxy masters that sit in front of other Salt masters to make the scaling issues less severe and possibly go away. There are very large-scale installations, I believe, in the US and the US military for Salt. I don't know too much about the actual instances, so I'm not going to cite them in this talk. But I'm basically in favor of pull-based systems. And so why have SUSE and Red Hat gone for Ansible and Salt? These are the reasons I think as an ex-SUSE employee. I can't say that they're absolutely truth, but these are my opinions, and I'm sharing them with you with my opinion and my best knowledge. There is a very strong anti-Java feeling in these communities. People have been very bit in the open source community with Java, and they're not happy about Oracle's management of it. Puppet, really, I don't know how you guys deploy Puppet, but I always found the best way to deploy Puppet was with Puppet, and not with the RPMs that came from the package distributions, and the package distributions never, in my experience, had ever installed Puppet this way, and so got very bad experiences of Puppet not being backwards compatible, which is not my experience with Puppet. So they have a very bad feeling of Puppet. Chef has a steep learning curve. And their large customers were already doing their own thing. Core customer bases did need small-scale automation. How do I install a cluster of 5 nodes is a big cluster for a lot of these companies. And both are Python-based companies. They've had really bad experiences with Ruby, particularly maintaining Ruby modules over the periods of 5-year, 10-year life cycles. So Ruby is not something that endears the Red Hat and the SUSEs of this world towards products like Chef and Puppet. And I would say that you guys have proved that Chef and Puppet work. I think Ansible and Salt are still having to go through some of the maturity issues that you have already experienced with the Puppets and the Chefs of this world. It's not an admin company. It's not whatever fucking works. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't have sworn on camera. It's let's have things how we want them to be, and I think there's a little bit too much optimism about how things break in the real world when you're running a big data center in the choices of these companies. But this is not me speaking for those companies, this is me speaking my opinions about those companies. And please don't sue me, anybody, for saying these things. Anyway, let's talk quickly about the salt components, because I've got far, far too much to say, and probably I'm halfway through my talk already, and I still haven't got halfway through my slides. SaltMaster, it hosts everything. It hosts the event bus. It manages cluster authentication. It has a lot of subcomponents. Have a quick slide on that. The salt formulas are a bit like your puppet manifests, your chef recipes. These are all in YAML that you can express dependencies, but no conditional logic in this. That's all in the Jinja. That's quite nice because Jinja's quite a nice scripting language, but as soon as you need to do something evil, yes, and you do need to do things evil, then you want to do something like make a piece of Python, call it an execution module, call that from your Jinja, use that to import your nasty, complicated, evil mangling of variables. Don't do it in Jinja 2. It becomes evil when you start doing evil things in it. Jinja can grab in variables and substitute these variables. And it gets these from pillars, which are, I'm going to give this variables to this machine. Or it gets them from grains, which is this machine has discovered this information about itself. Or from mines, where this machine can write into this, and this machine can read what that one has written. These are the three main mechanisms that you get information, as well as you get them from execution modules. Anyway, that's really where the variables come in. The rest of everything we put into the salt formulas is static. Minions is the name for the slave nodes or whatever, the things that connect to the master and are managed. These accept the instructions. They render the Jinja with information from the grains and the pillars that have been sent to them and can read the mines. So here's a very short explanation again about some of the details here. Here's an example of adding a package upgrade, and one of the reasons for putting this example in here is because that's the package upgrade I'm saying must be up to date, and that's the package upgrade I'm saying should be run as an upgrade on upgrade. I could have made that a little bit better example. So execution modules are a really easy way to extend Puppet. Essentially, they allow you to run a custom piece of Python on any of the modules that you're any of the machines you're managing. So here is basically all you need to do to make an abstract name. So you can have two different Python modules. Say you want to have one that runs on SL6 and one that runs on SL7. And you can then have these different Python scripts conditionally be executed with the same name even here. So this is done with the differences between DNF, yum, apt-get, zipper on the different platforms. Here's an example of something that just gets the Ceph version. This is all you need to do, if you put the file in the right place, to make a custom piece of Python executed on any of your nodes. It's really that simple. You just make a Python function. Execution modules and errors. This is where things start to get nasty. The information does get raised if it's an exception to the master, but any error return values can quite easily get lost in the general noise. And the logging only goes to the local logging if you make an execution module. So that can make debugging a little bit tricky. Anyway, state modules. This is where things start to get more like the DSL, the top-level DSL of Puppet. You don't say, call this execution function. These are more important level services. These have a test function. These allow you to specify a state, and these states should be idempotent. Their return value is standardized, so you can then do conditionals based on whether or not something succeeded. So this depends on that. Is only possible when you make a state module. But these have quite a bit more complicated return syntax. They have a slightly more complicated calling syntax. You can put your custom files into the states directory, just like I didn't mention on the execution modules, and then run this command salt sync all, and then all of your nodes will have this functionality. So really, state modules have to be idempotent, and I think everyone here knows why idempotency is really useful in configuration management. Sorry, I'm going to keep jumping on at a ridiculous speed on this talk because I'm probably nearly out of time. I'm really scared about this. State modules are meant to be reusing execution modules. This was the original design theory. My own personal experience is that if you're doing something sufficiently complicated, it's actually very nice to use Python's built-in test frameworks. So it's actually very nice to write a pure Python library, have the execution modules call the library, have the state modules call the library, and not do it as it was built, intended to be built. This is just so that you can get lovely tools like code coverage, unit testing, to all work when you're extending salt. So I worked with Ceph, a module for salt. The upstream salt Ceph configuration was written by me. I did it this way. This is roughly the flow of execution. There was a whole series of state details. And as we all know, configuration of storage is a pain. And I never got round to working with salt's configuration management test framework for configuring this, I'm afraid, so I can't talk about that. But I did use nose tests, tox, Python coverage, PyTest, and similar tools for testing my library work, and that worked very well. So I think I've explained that state modules are the top level, execution modules are the low level for extending salt. And I'll just make a few words about general API design in this area. Explicit arguments with a name can be done in Python functions. Defaulted arguments can be done in Python functions. Positional arguments can be done in Python functions. Keyword arguments can be done in Python functions. They are all a pain, apart from keyword arguments, once you start having to change your work, because everyone gets their APIs wrong first time around. So I would suggest that unless you've got one argument, stick with keyword arguments, because then you can sit there and present decent errors as decent exceptions when your APIs change the arguments that they take. That's my personal take-home message from my experience. You may find differently, but that's how I work with APIs that are changing frequently. Scoping. Now, this is one of the areas that I found salt a little bit annoying. The scope of each of these execution modules, each of these state modules, is completely within the execution module. So to actually make state shared between two runs of the same execution module, I have to make variables global at the module level. Otherwise, they're lost. That proved painful. So in talk summary, for the people who aren't in this room, everyone should know configuration management is useful, I think, in this room, and all sites do it here. And everyone knows what they do with the configuration management system, so I'm not going to dwell on those points. Mostly, you don't need to extend a configuration management system, but with Ceph, I felt that I really needed to, because Ceph is a sufficiently complicated service. I think there are extensions to every configuration management system now for Ceph, because storage is a pain. Execution modules are a really easy way to extend Ceph. State modules are quite a bit more complicated because they expect idempotence, and they expect a test routine, and they expect their response to list all the changes that they have made. So this is quite a bit more work because it's expected to be to a much higher standard. So think about if you actually do need a state module, but it's good to do one if you can. I'm going to say that's the end of the original talk. I'll just say that I've gone even further now. So as I said with the DSL for the salt formulas, which describe which packages you're installing and the like. These take their variables and their conditional information in the form of Ginger 2, and the Ginger 2 can take its variables from either pillars or execution modules or grains. I've also gone so far as to extend pillars to take queries from a database. This worked really well until the database wears down, and then it blocked the whole of Salt. I'm going to have to do some extra work to work around that, decoupling things a little bit, but it proved incredibly flexible for that. This was to hook in an inventory database into the configuration management system for reasons that are probably obvious to everyone here. I have even taken it a little bit further to say, what is the Salt master? And made this a Python script that can be overridden. So I would like to summarize with saying the last thing that I can say about Salt is, although I'm inclined against push-based systems, Salt is completely reconfigurable. And in that area, I am incredibly impressed with Salt. So I have reservations, but it's proved effective. And I think that's the end of my talk. Do you have any questions? Have I gone over time? Thanks. I'll go stand behind.
So to give you an opportunity to jump on the soapbox, you mentioned everybody hates doing config management with storage because it's hard. Is there anything on the horizon, or is there any possibility to do storage well for these sorts of systems or places where there's lots of state? Are there any emerging best practices or tools that do it better than we do?
Somehow, Brian, I have the horrible suspicion you'll find out before me. They have always proved a pain for me. Ceph is the best I have yet experienced, and even that's horrible. Like, how do you manage when your monitors go out of quorum? I think state's a really tricky thing, and one thing that's nice about Salt, I don't know about how you can do it in other systems, is with Salt you can send an event at the end of a stage to trigger the next stage, so that you can have the idea that all of one stage is completed and then trigger the next stage, but you have to do that in a slightly custom way. So the idea of totally getting rid of the manual stop stages in configuration migration isn't completely removed, and it's not out of the box in Salt. So I keep seeing every time I deal with storage, someone having to do something, wait 24 hours, wait 48 hours, do the next thing, and then trying to debug and write tests for things that you have to wait 24 hours for. It's horrible. So I'm a little bit despairing, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Sorry, I answered that too slowly.
Hi, do you have any idea if there's a way to sort of cache the pillar data on the minions so they don't have to depend on the master being there?
It is cached there, but it's the problem of how do you send the event to it, the minion, that you want something to happen, and how do you send the event that it's done? That's the problem. But the actual data is cached on the minions, and because it's cached on the minions, I have no idea how it managed to kill the whole of the Salt instance, blocking the request to update it.
Okay. Another question completely is, have you ever looked at a system called Reclass, which is a way to recursively build up a data structure based on YAML, and that use it as an external classifier for can be used for Ansible and also for Salt, in fact.
I haven't looked at this. No.
Okay. Well, we're considering using that. So.
Okay. I have to look at this.
Yeah. But I'm very interested in the database work that you put in, because it seems to go in sort of the same direction. So,
okay.
We should have a chat about it.
I'll chat about that offline. No trouble.
Okay. Any other questions for Owen?
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
No, thank you.